This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 176, and this week we are discussing upcoming releases, including The Duff, McFarlane USA, and Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
What does The Duff stand for, Aaron?
We'll get there. Don't worry. It actually stands for something. I found out. Spoiler figure views of Jupiter Ascending, Seventh Son, and Better Call Saul are from the Outside In topic this week, what the term Oscar bait really means, and some notable missteps in the Oscar hunt. We're going to have the latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. Yes, we will talk about Spider-Man, just a hair. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
Like you don't want to talk about Spider-Man.
I think you might be surprised at my take on this.
Oh, I know your
really?
Take on it.
You just made it the lead with you leading it.
Brian Williams.
Hello.
And Justin McCumber.
Well, and you make it sound like you're doing the listeners a favor.
Yeah, I'm doing you a solid.
I'm doing you a solid by telling you what I want to talk about first.
Exactly. Actually, you know what? It's going to come last. It's going to be the last news item. We're not going to talk about that first. So now, boom, things changed.
Fuck the police.
It's like
well,
magic.
That's not winning the internet at all.
Oh, God, I so hate that. Can we agree as a collective that that's done? Like that phrase is done now? Winning the internet and breaking the internet, those two things are done?
No.
If we're going to start there, where are we going to stop?
All right.
No, I don't think we can agree on that.
Can we give it a shot?
I don't know about winning the internet. I haven't heard that in quite a while. And breaking the internet, I've heard it a couple of times, of course, most recently with Kim Kardashian. But that's even still, it's not something we use very often. So no, it's still in play. Please continue to use it, everybody.
Why are you such an a-hole?
Just because I don't agree with you, that makes me an a-hole.
Yes.
Who are you, Justin?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my deal.
That's right.
J-Money's
got dibs on that game.
Oh, you guys are... Well, we just found out. Actually, I didn't even know this until these guys told me. Jon Stewart is retiring. Or I don't know if he's retiring. He's leaving The Daily Show.
The Daily Show, yeah.
At the end of the year, apparently.
Now, is that going to... Who's going to replace him? Or is that going to... The Daily Show just doesn't seem the same. Wouldn't seem the same without Jon Stewart.
Well, he wasn't the first one to do it, so...
No, but he's been there for, what, 15 years? Something like that?
Quite a while.
He's kind of synonymous with it at this point, whether he's the first one or not.
He's been doing it since 1999. He took over for Craig Kilborn, whose career obviously went through the roof.
Yeah, he's been doing it long enough. It's probably time.
You guys sad? Or really, I don't really watch it anymore.
I don't know. I really watch it either.
I haven't either.
I respect what he's done. I respect the mark he's put on entertainment and everything, but I don't. It's not really sad for me. He's a very smart fella. He's very funny.
He's got great timing.
Yep.
But like you said,
I watch it every day.
Do you really?
Yep. Well, 4 days a week, since that's how many they do, and I think the guy has got real passion for accurate news telling, and it will be sad to see him go, but I'm not shocked that he's ready to move on from doing what he's doing.
Does this mean we'll see him more behind the camera, do you think?
I think he's probably gonna, I mean, Rosewater was his first foray in the directing. I'm sure that's what he's gonna do, because I know him. We hang out, we're besties.
Yeah, you've had talks over cigars and porn. So
apparently you don't know him too well. He didn't tell you he was retiring.
Well, he didn't want to make me sad. I understand.
Oh, I see.
Over cigars and porn, that's what you connect? Those are the two things that go together?
Hey man, it's your and his lives, man. I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to report.
All right,
cigars and porn, I think Bill Clinton.
No, I think he used the cigars to make porn, and I don't want to talk about
it. So it's cigars and porn.
Anyway.
Good point, Scott. Win, Scott.
Yep.
The Scott is winning. How's that for your...
Did he win the internet?
He won the internet.
Yay! All right, let's go to movie and TV news. Sequels. We mentioned last week how John Wick 2 is coming. So that is confirmed. Also this week, we found out that Halloween is getting what they're calling a recalibration. They didn't like a reboot. They don't like... whatever, we'll get there. And now Neighbors 2 is also coming. and they're going to move next door to a sorority. Apparently, that's a Seth Rogen and Zac Efron movie. Do any of these excite you, Justin? Because I kind of laughed at the last two.
Well, the sequel for Neighbors, I do like. But first, let's talk about Halloween. You know, Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan, who were writers behind several of the Saw movies, have been tapped to pen this latest entry in the Halloween franchise for Dimension Films. They're, you know, if that was all they were known for, I probably would think this is just, what would you consider, a movie dreck, that they're just bringing these guys in, they'll put a movie out, and there's really nothing more to it. But apparently these guys are also, they've also been doing some work. Now, they did do Piranha 3 Double D, which was a classic, and I think will long be remembered for its, you know, amazing story, deep characters. But they also did an adaptation of The Outer Limits for MGM that's developing that. They also worked on God of War for Universal, and they recently wrote Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which was sold to CBS Films. So they actually have some, I don't know if I call them writing credits, but they have done enough work and have been hired by enough people that you hope they know what they're doing.
And then you go back and watch Piranha, and you think all that's not true. That's how bad. I mean, it's a
Did
good.
You, bad. you went yes. back and watched it again?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah,
is it that
thought,
bad?
I thought one and done, and that was it's, really all
it's
I
exactly
needed.
What you would think it would be.
I never got the one.
There's no story. There's no story. Put that.
Oh
so
no.
You, so
no.
You watched it again?
No, I'm saying I was saying going back to what he was saying as this all these things show that they have writing potential, and I'm like, well, the movie that they actually made that I saw did not.
Okay, so just to be clear. Justin hasn't seen The Lion King or The Sandlot, but has seen Piranha Double D.
Did either of those movies have a naked Kelly Brooks swimming around?
He does have a point.
No, they didn't.
You would not, would you, Justin, because you have not
I'm just making an educated guess that those films did
Maybe
not
Maybe you
have.
Should stop assuming. You know
you
what I say.
And you report back to me.
Yeah, there you go.
And Sandlot,
Until then,
surprised.
Scott is winning.
But anyway, this is not a reboot. It's not any kind, at least so far as we've been told. They're not rebooting it for a second time. Yeah, because Rob Zombie already rebooted it back in, what, 2005, 2006, somewhere around there, and then did a follow-up to it. So whether or not this will indeed restart it again or just kind of just pick it up, we all know Michael Myers is a killer and move forward from there. Who knows? But to be frank, Halloween isn't a film franchise that I've ever held close to my heart. I know, Aaron, you do.
I do.
But as I've said many times, I'm just not a slasher guy.
It's not something that needs an origin story. You could tell it in 30 seconds. So just have him go kill a bunch of co-eds and we're good. Just don't do all the imagery crap that Rob Zombie tried to do in his artistry, if you want to call it. That garbage thing. So the Neighbors thing, you're looking forward to that.
I am, because I really enjoyed the first Neighbors. Rose Byrne is a really funny woman. I'm kind of getting a little, well, kind of getting. I've been tired of some of Seth Rogen's shtick for a while now, but I felt like with him having a woman as his co-star, as opposed to Seth Rogen or the you know, other little guys that he seems to surround himself with, caused him to change up his game a little bit and bring something more interesting to his performance as opposed to just the sausage fest. But in this one, which will have the same writers and will have the same director as the first one, it's going to have, instead of a fraternity next door, it'll now have a sorority. Now, in what I read, it doesn't say whether the you know, Seth Rogen or Rose Byrne move in.
No,
or
they did.
It's
no,
the sorority that moves in.
The sorority moves in next door to them, so they call in Zac Efron to help
right.
him or to help them get the sorority out. So they're right. basically buddying up. That's the
right.
the skinny.
Right. So, yeah, you're just going to be changing out the genders, mm-hmm. and they're going to be bringing in Zac Efron and whoever else to help them do to these the sorority what they did to the fraternity. I don't know what new is going to be brought to the table story-wise, but just laughs, I'm sure there will be plenty.
As long as I want Rose Byrne to get more screen time than Seth Rogen. That's all I care about. Because I don't find him, he's just the same guy in every movie at this point. She was really, really funny.
She was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Speaking of additional movies, Lionsgate's CEO, John Feithheimer?
Feithheimer.
Says, Zig Heit! says they're looking at a Hunger Games prequel and sequel opportunities. Brian, you are a big fan. You go to all these movies when they come out. Do you want more, like, side stories of the Hunger Games world? I guess maybe different districts? I don't know.
No, not really. I think I'm pretty content with what we've been given and just kind of accepted at this point that it's wrapping up. I don't necessarily need any more, but I get it. I think this is a little bit more flexible franchise than some of the others. Say, I don't know, say Harry Potter, where it's gone from you know, him entering school to practically, you know, I guess his graduation was fighting Voldemort finally after 25 years. So I don't, but
I could see a lot more stories in that world than I could ever see in Hunger Games.
Oh, I can see additional stories, especially side shoots from Harry Potter's, absolutely. But it revolves around a school that has a finite time where, you know, these students go. And this is just, I can see some expansion with this. I just don't know if I want it. I want it. If I was picking the two, I'd take Harry Potter 9.9 times out of 10 than this. I'm fine with this movie, this franchise ending really soon. I don't need a prequel. I don't need to know how Pan Am came to existence. I don't need to know what happens after Jennifer Lawrence takes over the world. And
well, spoiler alert. I didn't know that.
My bad. She's the next President Snow.
I guess John Feithheimer. That's how I'm going to say his name from now on.
It's what they do have a few other things though in the works, like some sort of interactive gallery that's going to be at the Discovery Times Square later this year. It's an event that's like 6 months. It's going to be running for 6 months, and there's possibilities of a theme park attraction. Which theme park we don't know yet. But
bunch of hungry people waiting for an archer to show up or what?
So not one convenience. You know, a little area to pick up food, no restaurants, nothing.
That'd be a great theme park.
If you just pay the basic price of admission, you get to go to District 12, apparently.
The food court is just a ghost town.
That would be great. Oh, now I'm in. That would be a great theme park. Make it the opposite of what you expect.
That's right.
Anybody else? Scott, do you want to see any more in that world?
Not really. I mean, I've kind of gotten stale of it already, even with the last movie. I didn't like it as much as everybody else did. So I'm happy that we've only got one more, and then it's going to be done. I don't really feel like we need any more. And plus, we're the source material. Is it from Suzanne Collins or
no? The studio Lionsgate is looking at developing because it's a cash cow, man. They make a fortune, almost $1 billion. $1 billion.
Right, but I think that cash cow really rests a lot on the character Katniss.
Maybe they'll show her as a little girl. Growing to be Katniss.
She wasn't anything up until that. Yeah.
You'd be amazed what people seem to go for, man. Nobody would have thought Batman's... Well, I guess Batman always wins. Origin movies are big. People love origin stories. As much as they say they don't want them anymore, they still go to all of them.
Yeah, but the thing that would be interesting for origin is Katniss and her... There's nothing about her origin that would be interesting.
Scott, think about it. She's 6 years old. She sees a bow. Or she sees string and wood, and she makes a bow out of it, right? Because she's all sad and broken hungry.
Yeah, that sounds
Kills her first deer. I think this is really exciting stuff.
Mm. Yeah, we could call it Deer Hunter.
No, and Christopher Walken shows up.
Diddy Mao.
Nice. All right, well, how about something Scott would be excited about? Netflix is developing a Legend... I can't say this with as much enthusiasm as I'd like. Netflix is developing a Legend of Zelda TV series. I don't know anything about Legend of Zelda. I had to call my son to ask him exactly what that means. And
not me.
Well, I knew you'd go for like 3 hours. He'd tell me in 5 minutes. So I call him.
Yeah, I sent you one paragraph. That was 3 hours.
So what do you think? Are you excited about this?
I'm very excited, but also nervous, apprehensive a little bit because...
What is it?
Legend of Zelda is a video game series that I wouldn't quite call it medieval, but it's more of a fantasy setting. It's got magic involved in it. It revolves around a character by the name of Link, who has to rescue the princess, whose name is Zelda. Very much Sword and Shield kind of style thing. As far as story goes...
It's like a fantasy.
Yeah, it's very, very much fantasy. I mean, there's magic, there's goblins, there's... you know, the overarching enemy is this guy named Ganon. But there's so many games in the series, and only recently has someone actually tried to put them together in a sort of a timeline. There was a book that was released a couple years ago called Hyrule Historia that basically put all the games in order and tried to connect the dots, so to speak. But each game more or less stands on its own. It's not like one game ends and then the sequel comes out. It's just each one kind of stands alone. The real problem that I see with this becoming a TV series is the character of Link himself. Because if you play the games, Link doesn't have any kind of voice. He never speaks audibly. He never says a word that you hear or read.
That makes for good TV.
And that's the problem. And that's not to say that he doesn't speak in context of the story, but you never hear him say a word. You never read any text that he says, but people respond to whatever he says. Oh, yeah, Link, you're right. We should do this. But he never actually says anything.
Well, how do they know he's right?
What do you mean?
If they say, I know you're right, how do they know he's right?
Because he has said something, but you never... He's saying something, but he doesn't have a voice.
Okay.
And by voice, I don't mean an audible voice. Even, like, in a book, a character that is communicating in some way has a voice behind it.
Isn't there a cartoon that's based on this, too?
There was. There was a TV show back in the 80s. He did.
Okay, so...
But...
It's established that he has a voice at some point.
To say that, to call that cartoon series canon to the Zelda series is a far, far reach. That show is universally land-blasted as awful.
So would this be like a Lord of the Rings kind of thing? Or
kind of. What they said they're actually going for is think like a family-friendly Game of Thrones in that...
What is a family-friendly Game of Thrones?
Well, I mean...
No family fucking. I think that's right out.
That's out. No nudity. No vulgarity. I mean, the story
would Link talk if he was banging his sister?
The story of Game of Thrones. If you strip away all that kind of stuff, there's a dense storyline going there. There's a lot of moving parts going there that, you know, you could throw that in there and make it. I don't think that they're. I would be surprised if they made Legend of Zelda as dense as something like Game of Thrones. I think they're just trying to make some kind of parallel or get some people's ears to perk up and say, hey, that was successful. Let's make a kid-friendly version of something that's hugely popular already. I would see it. I think Lord of the Rings would be a closer comparison, although I don't think Legend of Zelda is nearly as dense as that either. So very, very
Justin,
nervous about it.
Justin's a big gamer too. So is this something you want to see?
No. I think there's definitely potential for this, but a lot of it is going to be the casting. Who do you get to play Link? Who do you get to play Zelda? Who's going to be doing the special effects for it? I don't know. I'm not excited for it, but give me a good trailer, and then I might be. But I can think of a dozen games that I would sooner see made into a TV show than Legend of Zelda.
I actually kind of have to agree. The Legend of Zelda is my favorite game series of all time. If you saw my basement, I collect anything and everything Zelda. Link to the Past is my favorite game of all time.
See,
I have a hard time.
You're just nervous because you're afraid that...
I don't want to say nervous because I'm going to see it and I'll probably find some enjoyment with it, but I don't anticipate it being anywhere near the quality of the Lord of the Rings, and I'm not even a huge Lord of the Rings fan.
Netflix has a pretty good track record, though.
They do.
Thus far.
That gets me excited because they might take some chances with it. However, there's still a possibility that this thing may never happen. Nintendo is very, very protective of their properties, and Zelda is one of their top three intellectual properties that they've got, and they're not going to, you know, if they don't like what they see, they could very easily shut it down.
Well, I know, and they recently did a Halo show, which sucked. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure they're going to test it. They don't want to make that mistake. I kind of want to go back and see if we can get a mute banging a sister and see how that works out. No?
I wonder if you could somehow make a mute character in a series. I mean, you would have to be surrounded by lots of other characters, obviously.
Subtitles. Just pretend it's Japanese. No?
No.
It would require a lot of eyebrow work.
Yeah, you would have to get... You'd have to get somebody really with a unibrow because they'd have to just make that thing go all the way across.
Or you you'd really just have to CG it. Really, you couldn't get a human is not capable of the kind of eyebrow work that I think this would require.
That's true. It's a good point.
Or put a mask on him like V for Vendetta.
There you go. Well, how would that work if he's mute?
That's true.
He still has to be talking.
Scott, you just made it more complicated.
No, I was saying to
make you just made it harder to understand.
To make the subtitles work. Because if you have subtitles and no mouth moving, that wouldn't make any sense. But
he's thinking it. We're all hearing his thoughts. Because that's apparently how he does it in the game. Everybody just understands him. Right. Just walks up.
Well, it's supposed to be RPG light in that you
Scott,
are,
most of our listeners don't know what the hell you're talking about.
It's a role-playing game where you are playing a role. You were supposed to be Link, so they don't want to give
the I didn't mean you had to explain it. I'm just kidding. Okay. Go ahead.
I think Dragon Age would be a more interesting franchise to turn into a TV show.
Well, of course you do. That's the thing you're playing like 24 hours a day.
No, I finished it today. Booyah!
See? Okay, now we come to the Marvel news. For those of you that are sick of Marvel, you could probably skip ahead 5-10 minutes so you don't have to listen to it.
I'll
Not
right
you,
back.
Scott. You have to stay here.
Ah, oh, damn it.
But in case you haven't missed, in case you missed it, because the internet was all about Spidey for about a day, they worked out a deal with Sony and Marvel so that Kevin Feige can.
Isn't it Feige?
I don't know. I just like saying
Feige.
It's Feige, but I like saying Feige. They worked out a deal so he can produce it. So Marvel is able to bring Spider-Man into the fold. He's essentially going to officially begin his tour with Marvel on the Civil War, Captain America Civil War. And then there's another Spider-Man movie that is coming out July 28th, 2017, and he will be involved with that. So Marvel will be involved with Sony's release of Spider-Man movies from here on out. Sony mm-hmm. still has controlling interest in the property. People are saying that Marvel has it back. No, they don't.
No.
They do not have it back. Some sources like The Wrap have reported that Andrew Garfield will not be coming back to play Spider-Man in this new incarnation. They're going to go a different way.
That's such a bad choice.
I do think, I agree. Let's get into that. What do you think about Andrew Garfield? What's the consensus? I think he's a great Spider-Man. I have mm-hmm. no problem with him whatsoever. Any complaints about his performance that we want it recast?
Nope.
Not for me.
Not for me either. I think I told you this earlier today. He's not what was wrong with that second movie.
Well, you really liked the second movie.
I didn't love it. I didn't think it was terrible like you guys and some others did.
I didn't think it was terrible either. So I just thought it was okay.
But like I said, he wasn't a problem in that movie. I thought he was fine. I thought he was a good modern version of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
no, he really is the main thing that keeps that treading water at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I think we've all pretty much echoed each other's comments about him just being, he's a great Peter Parker. He's a great Spider-Man. That's not the issue. It's the 25 villains that they do poorly in every freaking movie.
Yep. That's pretty much how I feel about it.
And dead parents making James Bond cameos. God.
That was a horrible story idea. Leave the parents out of it.
Yeah, we've covered this. Yeah, let's get to newer stuff.
Let's get beyond it. Well, somebody might not have heard us talk about it, but parents, be gone. I really feel like people panicked. I think that the fanboy community, that nice vocal minority, the geek minority that has been screaming and wailing because they think Marvel should handle everything in the world, I think they're really a big factor of why this happened. Do you guys agree or disagree? Justin, Brian.
I think that definitely the fan community has been asking for this and begging for Spider-Man to make an appearance in these films. So definitely that was part of it. I do have to wonder if this isn't maybe Sony deciding, well, we got some bad press with all those email leaks and whatnot. People really didn't seem to like the second Spider-Man movie. So why don't we, you know, do what we can to please some folks, give them what they want, and then maybe we'll get back into their good graces by having Spider-Man be a part of this. No matter what the reason for it is, I am really excited because Spider-Man is so, just for me, intrinsically tied with other Marvel characters, whether you're talking about the Fantastic Four or the Avengers. He's always, for me, he's a part of a larger group. Whenever he's had his own films and he's the only superhero in the mix, even in the good films, it for me, it always kind of felt a little lonesome. I like it better when he's part of something larger, and this gives him that opportunity. You know, and they've said that other Marvel characters will appear probably in those next Spider-Man movies. There could be Thor. There could be Hulk. Who knows what they're going to do? So
Daredevil.
Exactly. There could be Daredevil, because Daredevil's TV show makes it part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The sky is the limit, and I really look forward to seeing what they're going to do with this. I could not be happier. Now, let's just not fuck it up.
I'm the complete opposite. Scott, you thought that I'm giddy. I am absolutely not.
I knew your response.
I'm not happy about it at all. I really believe Marvel is not the end-all, be-all means to every answer in the comic book universe. I don't think they do a masterful job with everything. Spider-Man is just, and he is, I will be honest, he's one of my favorite characters in all of fiction.
Yeah, you said that for a long time.
Yeah, and he is not the team member. He's always been the loner. He's been the guy that's dealing with the conflicting identity. He's trying to balance being a kid / young adult, however you want to say it, with being a superhero. And his existence has never been, I'm part of the Avengers, which is what people seem to be clamoring for. That's just not something I care about.
He is part of the Avengers.
Yeah, but he's more like a generic member. He's not really part of the event. He's not a big part of that team.
In relation between Spider-Man and the Avengers, I know in recent years in the comic books, he's joined the Avengers, which was a pretty big event because for literally decades.
Thank you.
He applied and tried his best to be a part of the Avengers, and they kept saying no.
Which is a big part of who Peter Parker is.
Which is what would work just phenomenally in the movie cinematic, you know, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, just imagine him helping the Avengers and like at the, you know, maybe midway through the movie, whether it's the end of the movie, like, come on, guy, you know, he's basically begging for a roster spot. And they're like, yeah, we're good. Appreciate the help. We're good.
Hell, let me call your mom.
Yeah, you know, and maybe showing off and just, imagine Spider-Man flying around New York at the, you know, at the big battle scene in the Avengers movie. And he's talking trash to Hawkeye, you know, or he's sitting on the Hulk's shoulders, you know, maybe whatever, shooting webs at those Chitauri characters or something like that. But he's bouncing around. He's kind of just supporting everybody else. He's playing along with everybody else and throwing out his sarcastic wit and all that other stuff as he normally does.
As he wants to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And Justin is absolutely right, where Spider-Man, while he may not be a member of the Fantastic Four, he may not be a member of the Avengers or the X-Men, he has had just a lot of interactions with just about everybody in the Marvel Universe. So it totally makes sense to have him involved in it. And it is nothing really but good for Sony, because they've had 5 Spider-Man movies, and let's face it,
only one that was a misstep, and that still made, I'm saying financially, and that only made $700 million worldwide. So it's not like it was a flop.
Fan-wise, 5 they've made, 2 of them fans have not liked, and they have been pretty vocal about how much they did not like.
Sony's track record with the Spider-Man movies is not as well as Marvel's movies with just about every other character. I'm sorry. This is a positive for Spider-Man. It's a positive for Sony. It's a positive for Marvel. This opens up so many more avenues. Think about the possibility of once this Infinity Gauntlet, whatever it is, giant scheme they've got going on, they can now, at this juncture, they could spin off into a Secret Wars, movie setup or movies setup, crossing all sorts of different studios and everything. This is good news. I respect your opinion on, and your fandom on Spider-Man and everything, but what Sony has to play with is very small. Now you're allowing Marvel to bring a lot more toys in. It just totally opens up his universe.
I like the idea. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't read the comic books, but wasn't when you read those as they were coming out when you were younger, wasn't the fun thing to see characters from different series sometimes come together and see them in the same world.
Spider-Man was never really in the same place with Thor, and that really wasn't his thing.
Well, I mean, you could
say... I'm not saying they never crossed paths, yes, but...
Well, not with Thor, but he did have quite a few run-ins with the Fantastic Four, with Daredevil, Cloak and Dagger. Punisher. There's all sorts of characters. Punisher, yeah. He was never mixing up with the gods, for the most part, type of characters. But he was definitely down in the grittier parts of the Marvel Universe.
The Hell's Kitchen stuff.
And yeah. To me, I would imagine if I were reading a comic book for the first time and I saw a character pop in from a different series, I'd be like, oh, that's awesome.
As long as, and I'm sure they will, because Marvel seems to be very respectful of their own properties, obviously. As long as they adhere to who the character really is, who Peter Parker is, which, as much as I like Andrew Garfield, I don't think Peter Parker, these past two movies, has really been written as he is, because he's never been the cool kid. And they kind of... Andrew Garfield's kind of a cool guy, where Tobey Maguire, I think, was a better Peter Parker because he always seemed like a guy that nobody really would hang out with, which is kind of who Peter Parker is. He's not like somebody that people don't like. He's just like the outsider. People just don't see him, you know, that guy. Mm-hmm. And as long as they write him that way, and like Brian was saying, if they did an Avengers storyline along that way, where Spider-Man ends up helping them, but they really don't accept him, because that is more Spider-Man's character than... Just he shows up at their door and they're like, come on in, kid. You know, it's just not like that.
And again, I'm flipping the switch a little bit here with Marvel and DC, but couldn't the same thing be said about Batman? Isn't Batman tormented by his, you know, parents' death brooding?
You can't talk DC with Marvel.
Nobody shuns Batman.
He killed
nobody.
He almost kills you. He just doesn't save you.
He just breaks every bone in your body. He won't kill you.
Yeah.
But he will wreck your life.
He's the hero we deserve.
Nobody puts Batman in the corner.
No.
Well, let's. One of our listeners actually took the time to write in, and I think the points kind of go to real quick what we're talking about. He says, "Hey hoes, I feel like I'm in the minority here, but I have to say I'm pretty disappointed by the news for a few reasons." This is from Zach P. He says, "Since Disney acquired Marvel in 2012, they have done nothing right by the old webhead across their media. They made a cartoon where he has unlimited access to S.H.I.E.L.D. resources and is not only on a team, but leading it. In the comics, Doc Ock took over Peter's mind and was a superior Spidey than he ever was. And since coming back, he has yet to struggle with his personal life," which, like I said, is a big thing of Peter Parker. Number two, "Peter works best when struggling with dual lives, which I feel has yet to be a concern for any Marvel movie." Absolutely agree with that. "He keeps his identity secret from even other heroes and tends to be a loner historically, something I would wager Disney has zero interest in, judging by recent comics. Also, Marvel has done only one good villain with Loki, so I'm pretty wary of them handling one of the greatest rogue galleries in comics." End rant. What do you guys think about that?
I think Sony's been trying it forever and fucking it up, so maybe someone else should give it a try.
I don't think that's fair. Sony did a great job with two movies, and it was okay for Spider-Man 3. The reboot, I thought, was a good movie. It was a very good movie, minus the parent storyline. The second one was just meh. So I don't think they've been fucking it up. They made a couple mistakes. Thor 2, I didn't think was that good. Iron Man 3, I thought was just okay. So it's not like Marvel's infallible.
I would take their failings over the good stuff that Sony has so far done with Spider-Man.
But if the worst thing you can say about their movies is, it wasn't that good, or it wasn't that great, but then you add that in with the home runs, like the original Iron Man, the Avengers, Captain America, Winter Soldier, they just blow the doors off what Sony's doing. Sony's got it just appears that Sony has a very narrow vision of what they want to do with Spider-Man, and it's just not working. It's obvious it's not working in comparison to what Marvel is doing.
And Peter Quill's a better dancer.
Jesus. That's probably true. He can do emo a lot better, but who couldn't? All right, well, that's enough Spider-Man talk. We'll see how it all pans out. I'm really interested to see. Do you think they go, if they do recast Garfield, do they go unknown, or is there somebody in mind? Anybody have anybody in mind? Because I prefer unknown if you're
going to
do it.
I prefer unknown at this point, especially if there's going to, I don't know. I don't really care, to be honest with you. But at this point, you know, Marvel's bringing in, I mean, with the names that they're bringing in, it may be Benedict Cumberbatch for all I know.
He's going to duel it up.
They could probably hire George Clooney. He will be Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
An aging Spider-Man comes out of retirement.
Pull off playing like an 18-year-old kid.
Yep, so. Yep.
Oh, I can see it.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. All right, well, finally, a movie that deserves to be remade. How Poltergeist hasn't been made prior to movies like the aforementioned Spider-Man, Batman, Red Dawn, and Annie is just beyond me. So on the Mount Rushmore of actually scary movies, this original Paranormal Activity has made multiple generations afraid of clowns, midget women with high-pitched voices, and unfinished swimming pools. So if you haven't been blessed by Craig T. Nelson's best performance ever, it's about a family that moves into this static, bland suburban neighborhood only to realize that some of the tenants really don't want them to be there. So, Scott, have you seen the original, Scott? And if so, what'd you think about how this one kind of the trailer measured up to the original?
I have seen it, but I was in my late teens when I saw it for the first time, and it scared the pants off of me when I was a kid. But
literally?
It did. That, I mean, it wasn't like...
Well, that was Aaron.
That's when you watched it with me, Scott.
No, I mean, it wasn't like The Ring or some of those other movies. Paranormal Activity, the first time I saw that. It didn't scare me like that, but it was definitely creepy. And I remember, like, even as a kid, you know, talking about, you know, houses being built on ancient Indian burial grounds. Was that Poltergeist, mm-hmm. right?
Spoiler alert.
For a movie that's 30, you can spoil Prison Break, but I can't spoil a 40-year-old movie.
Keep going.
So, I don't know. I feel like we don't have those kind of movies nowadays. Everything scary is always either jump scares or slashers. I mean, I like the Paranormal Activities, but this is one that always stuck in my head, and I didn't see it till later. And I want that scary movie that kids are talking about. You know what I mean? Built on an ancient burial ground. I mean, that's like stuff that all the kids talked about. We're all scared of. We're all worried that our...
He likes it so much, he spoiled it twice.
That our... we're all worried about what was under our house because you can't check it. You know what I mean? And I like... I think
looks like they're kind of staying somewhat true to the original. Mm-hmm. They are making some changes. I like that... I hate that I don't remember her name, but it's just the really short lady who says, "Carol Ann." You know, they're replacing her with a guy.
Zelda Rubinstein. That was the little midget lady.
Yep, yep.
I know, I'm telling you.
But he actually, you know, but he does, at least in the trailer, it doesn't feel like, oh, okay. They, you know, at first you're kind of like, yeah, all right, well, they switched it up a little bit. But then he just seems to fit the role, so I'm going to be fine with him. Jared Harris? Harris.
Did you watch this trailer?
So, I'm actually excited about this. This is one of the few scary movies that I think I've been excited to see. And mm-hmm. this looks like it's that good mix of updating it, but yet still kind of staying true to the original. And
who's directing
it?
Are you just trying to put him on the spot?
Are you just trying to be a dick or what?
No, I thought you knew. I thought that was part of your research. Sorry.
No.
I'm the one that does research.
It's Gil Keenan. Nobody. That's who's directing it.
Sorry, edit that out. I apologize.
No, it's cool. When you're a dick, we want to make sure everybody knows.
I'll own up when I'm trying to be a dick. That was not one of those moments.
You know, since you brought it up, Gil Keenan has directed City of Ember and Monster House.
So nothing, really.
Monster House was good.
It's animated. How hard is that? Hey, guy, draw that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's
really?
How easy that is.
Yeah,
I could do that in my sleep.
Oh, jeez.
I'm going to do one right after the show. I'm going to make my little animated movie.
I agree with Brian. I think that's one that I'm really amped for a reboot on that one. This doesn't feel like a cash-in or, oh, got to make another sequel. Which one are you going to throw a dartboard at the movie wall? And
hope they have that weird gelatinous red, I don't know, like...
Snot
that weird
shit.
Snot shit. Yeah, that, it looks like a something just,
man, demon afterbirth.
Exactly. Ugh. So anyway, now he's got that image in your head. Poltergeist does open later on this summer, July 24th, 2015. And if your ass was cruising with a box of 12-inch Rockford Fosgate speakers, an Alpine deck, and an amp that'll push all that shit to its max back in the late 80s, early 90s, then there is no way that you weren't violating some sort of a noise ordinance somewhere by blasting some NWA. Mm-hmm. Aaron, I know you live this.
Actually, so pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, so I know you got to be pumped for this biopic called Straight Outta Compton, led by Dr. Dre and Ice Cube.
And what a great trailer. You actually have the musicians that were part of the biopic that actually introduced their own trailer. They actually cruise the streets, and actually, I think that's fantastic. That's just something I've never seen before.
Were they in the 6.4?
Mm-hmm, I think so, yeah. I don't know if they're hydraulics, but...
No, it looked like a Bentley, what they were driving.
Yeah, they've come far. You know, it looks, I love NWA, and even if it's illegal for me to say what it stands for, I'm a big fan of their music. If you're not familiar with it, Fuck the Police was like an anthem in my neighborhood, Gangsta Gangsta, Something to Dance For, 8 Ball. They have a lot of great songs, and it's one of those things where their music kind of came to me, and I was in a similar place. Now, I realize I'm not African-American, but I grew up across the street from the project, so I lived a lot of this.
So you're African adjacent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got a black friend. No. But I lived across the street from the project. I was part of the projects up until I was in my teens. So I saw a lot of this stuff every day. So it's very understandable to me. It's relatable to me. I grew up in this music scene. So for me, this is huge. This is probably one of my most anticipated movies of the year.
Now, was you a Blood or a Crip?
I made sure to not affiliate myself with the gang because there's certain
he was
things...
4-H.
Yep.
I was at home, Eric.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I do have to ask you, Aaron. Did you have some 12-inch Rockford Fosgates?
Nope, but I had this. I had a nice bass in the trunk, like the entire trunk. My bass.
Because you're all about the bass.
I am all about that bass.
Well, I had a couple of 12-inches, but they were MTX Terminators. They weren't. Rockford Fosgates. Now, I had the Rockford Fosgate mids and highs in the door.
Mm.
600-watt amp, Kenwood deck. Yeah, I was breaking some definite noise ordinances when I was in high school. And just about my parents hated it, but yet they could always hear me coming about a mile out, a couple miles out. Before my
30 minutes away.
Yeah, but I'm really excited to have this movie come out. I love, the early rap culture. It was definitely something that I listened to a lot. I was a little more into stuff like Sir Mix-a-Lot and
shit, that ain't rap. You know,
Luke Skywalker. I was more the party rap as opposed to the gangster stuff.
Kid and Play. Did you watch House Party? The big screen.
My life is that movie was based on my life.
Yeah.
Because I had
that big high
fade.
You had that big high top fade.
Hell yeah. But I'm a big fan of the music itself, of the people that created it, and I cannot wait to see this movie that looks to have all of their not just their permission, but their approval.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. I was a Kool Moe Dee fan myself.
Oh God.
I go to work like an architect.
Wild Wild West.
Neither one of you bitches should ever talk about rap ever again.
Are you saying if I showed up with
you'd get shot.
With my CNC Music Factory playing, I'd have gotten shot.
I promise you'd get your ass kicked, if not shot, yes.
Gonna make you sweat till you bleed.
Is that dope enough indeed?
And just so people know, when you're the only white guy in a black neighborhood, you understand what racism is. So you get it. I totally get it.
Aww.
That's right.
Oh. Aaron.
I got picked on. I was always getting in fights. I had a nickname and everything.
What, Ghost? Because you're so white?
No. Kaz, but
it's
a long
Casper.
Story.
Fastest white guy on the track team, huh?
Because they were always behind him.
Wrap it up. I'll tell you.
All right. Straight Outta Compton comes out August 14th. 2015, so a little bit more of a wait there. And if there's any way you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at h_outsider, like us on facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider, join the group, lots of fun, a lot of interaction with the other listeners. Email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com if you got any ideas, anything you want us to talk about, complain about, praise us about, emphasis on the praises about that, you know, we like our ego being fed, so.
We have got three movies we're going to be talking about, all of them coming out on February 20th. The first one, The Duff. A high school senior instigates a social pecking order revolution after finding out that she has been labeled The Duff, which stands for Designated Ugly Fat Friend, to her prettier, more popular friends. Now, this is directed by Ari Sindal, and it stars Bella Thorne, Mae Whitman, and Robbie Amell. Now, I should say, Mae Whitman, who some of you may know better from, say, Arrested Development. She was also in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think she's doing Parenthood. She's playing a teenager. The chick is 27 years old.
That's normal in Hollywood, though.
But she barely looks a day over 18. So either it's good genetics or they've got industrial light and magic working overtime on every picture and video taken of her. Now, Aaron, I could definitely see you being the Duff back in high school. Are you ready to see your life revisited just from the female perspective?
Has there been a weekend that with weaker releases than this one?
Oh, man.
In so long? I mean, honestly, this is just... I want the youth, the kids, to have their own 16 candles and whatnot. So if this is it, great. Looks dumb to me. But, hey, as long as they handle this tactfully. This is one of those premises that would probably irritate me a lot if they do it wrong. So if reviews were stellar, I would check it out. That's the only way I would check it out.
I'm curious, what's the difference between doing this right and doing this wrong?
When I have a larger family, so whenever if something is just fat jokes, that's not funny to me. I think it's lame.
Oh, and you mean larger family. You mean
fat. Oh. Half of my family's fat.
But you meant you had a lot of family members.
No. No, I'm saying if you put
he was auditioning for the clumps.
Yeah. If you put him in an elevator, it might not go all the way up, is what I'm saying. So whenever you make something that's similar to this kind of story, I'm always worried it's just going to be cheap fat jokes, and that's not funny to me. I find that insulting. But if it's done well, I would check it out. If it's something that's, you know, with a little bit of heart, I would check it out. But it depends on what the critics say. I'm not interested at all. But it's not targeted at us.
Really. Yeah, I have.
Do you want to see it?
Not really. No.
Justin, all right, well, Justin, you're kind of a teenage girl. Do you want to see it?
You know, I was, I am fat, always have been fat. So I'm probably, I could have been many people's Duffs over time. Luckily, I've reached the ripe old age of 42 and I don't give a shit what people think. So no, this movie does not interest. I've moved on from my fat years. And caring about it.
All right, let's go have a cheeseburger.
Celebrate. Yep, second film in this cavalcade of awesomeness, McFarlane, USA. Now, this was directed by Nicky Caro, and it stars Kevin Costner, Mario Bello, Morgan Saylor, and Ilse Fisher.
Isla Fisher.
Is it Isla?
She's an Isla amongst
herself. You're going all Frozen on us there, Justin.
Sorry. Yeah, I know who this little bitch is.
You know who she is. She was the redhead chick on Wedding Crashers.
Yes. Now you can. Now you see me.
No, this is a little girl.
Oh, I thought you were saying Isla Fisher.
Isla Fisher is not a little girl. She is a bountiful woman.
Elsie, like Ilse Fisher or Ilse.
Elsie, maybe.
Elsie, like I guess. This is a little.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
some little chick. Anyway.
Wow.
Thought you did your research, my bad.
Elsie. Yeah, you're right. That is it's a different girl. Okay.
Fucking thank you.
Jeez, I don't even know why we interrupt him. He's right so often.
I know. God, thank you.
Oh, don't stroke his ego anymore.
A cross-country coach in a small California town transforms a team of athletes into championship contenders. Ooh, Scotty, any thoughts on this one?
I watched this trailer, and I immediately thought this is a cross-country version of Remember the Titans. Down to the crotchety old guy that hasn't played the sport before and has a blonde daughter that's critiquing everything he does. That's really what I thought the whole time. I think, I don't know, Costner looks good, though. And there was a joke at the end that I found really funny, even though it's been done several times, but
that's
I didn't see it coming.
$10.
Man, I don't know, though. Looking at Lesser of Three Evils, I don't know.
Brian, you're the Costner obsessor. Is this like in your wheelhouse then?
Well, it's one of those that's Remember the Titans.
You're fumbling
the
around
rookie,
a lot. That doesn't sound
the
like
rookie
it.
with Dennis Quaid, the baseball movie. That's mm-hmm. kind of just they're all. I mean, it's just they're all the same. It's that sports story. The team that nobody gives them a second thought and they win something. So. It's a pretty cookie cutter formula. It obviously works. It's relatively low budget. They'll make more than their money back, mm-hmm. and I can see why they get made. I'm just at this stage in the year in my life, whatever. I'm just not really in the mood for it, even with Kevin Costner involved.
Mm-hmm. Me either. You can go to the next one.
All right, now for the only film in this trilogy or triplet of films. That has me even halfway interested. We have got Hot Tub Time Machine 2, directed by Steve Pink, who also directed the first one, and it stars Adam Scott, Jillian Jacobs, Rob Corddry, Chevy Chase, he's back in it.
How is he still
Craig
alive?
Robinson.
Is he embalmed at this point? I don't understand how he's
I think
still
he's
kicking.
Just, now he's just animated by Disney's, like Hall of Presidents. Just
weekend
a robot.
The
when
Chevys.
Lou, who has become the father of the internet, this is Rob Corddry's character, is shot by an unknown assailant. Jacob and Nick fire up the time machine again to save their friend. Brian, Hot Tub Time Machine, I don't remember what our consensus was when that movie came out. I know that I saw it when it hit video on demand and thoroughly enjoyed it. Are you excited for a second trip down the time machine?
No.
Hot tub.
No, I'm not. I was entertained by the first one. I waited till, cable video on demand or something. But yeah, it's just one of those. I don't need a second one. Mm-hmm. Going to the well one too many times, basically.
Is this the one with her name is Bubbles?
That was Zach and Mary Make a Point.
Sorry. Okay.
Same guy though, Craig T. Robinson.
I know.
Man, this trailer looks dumb. I'm sorry. I like dumb comedies, but they're just ringing that thing already with the second movie. Just the past and the future, and it just looks like they're trying so hard. I was kind of liking the idea of seeing the sequel until I saw the most recent trailer, and it just looks really, really silly to me. I will be shocked if it's good. I hope it is for you, Justin, because I, like Brian, watched the first one on video afterwards, and I laughed. I chuckled a couple times, but most of the jokes were in the trailer. And was kind of looking forward to maybe hoping they did it better. It looks like they pushed it a little too far for me.
One question. John Cusack, he's too busy to pop back up?
No, he watched the first one.
The first one's kind of dumb fun, though. I mean,
he was the worst part of it.
You think he didn't get invited back?
He's like the enemy of funny at this point. He was funny for, I think, a couple of years, when the whole Better Off Dead mm-hmm. thing was happening. But since
$2.
Then, he has lost any kind of humor he's had. And if he's funny now, it is purely on accident.
He's angry now. If you follow him on Twitter.
I don't like John Cusack much. And so I'm glad Adam Scott is in this film as opposed to Cusack. That alone would almost make me want to go see it. Just to help bump up a little bit I can for the box office.
I got to be honest. I would watch it, but I would not make an appointment to go to the theater and watch it. There's where I stand.
So you want to be kidnapped into it or just accidentally fall into a movie theater?
I'm cool if somebody wants to kidnap me and pay for my ticket. Yeah, that's fine. Boom, score. I get free popcorn and I get bondage. It's a little 50 Shades of Aaron. I like it. You all say that, but I think
all
you
right,
might
folks.
Enjoy
well,
it.
Of these, I'm just trying to move on, Aaron. We're all trying to move on. Of these three films, which ones are we most likely to head out to a theater and check out? We've got The Duff, McFarlane USA, Hot Tub Time Machine 2. Brian? Come on, you know you want to go tub thumping.
I've got to support Costner. Sorry. That's just a deciding factor, Kevin Costner. So,
Justin, was that a Chumbawamba reference?
Yes, it was.
All right.
Can never have enough of those.
That's right. And Scotty?
I'm going to go McFarlane USA as well, only because it's a lesser of three evils.
And Aaron?
Jesus.
Don't make me sit alone naked in this hot tub.
I'll go see Hot Tub Time Machine with Justin just so he's not alone in there. I'm not wearing any pants, though.
Hey, I don't wear. You don't get in a hot tub with clothes on, man. That's naked time.
It's too hot in the hot tub.
All right. There you go. Box office. SpongeBob rose from the ocean depths to capture number one by a landslide with $55.3 million. Who the hell saw that coming? Apparently Nickelodeon did, because they greenlit this thing. I had no idea SpongeBob was still this relevant.
I didn't either.
That's insane. American Sniper continued its quest to be a franchise with $23.2 million and $281 million total. But it should cross $300 million in the next week or so. What do you guys think?
That's a lot of dead presidents.
That is. I'm thinking they do a prequel, something.
I still need to see it. It looks
Jupiter
really good.
Is descending as it only managed $18.3 million on a huge $176 million budget. Seventh Son proved that Rooster Cogburn does not belong in Mordor because it made a piddly $7.2 million.
Wow.
Yeah. $7.2 million. Maybe, people are sick of that goddamn fucking voice of his. Justin, you're going to talk about that movie in a second. And all I really want to know is, do they do a Dreaming with Jeff commercial in the middle of it?
I wish.
That's a guy who...
You know, he actually has an album? That's what that all is.
It's an album to help you go to sleep.
Yes.
That's a guy who has smoked way too much weed. He needs to just kick it back.
To be his dealer.
So if his forte is putting people to sleep, I don't know, from a studio executive position, if that's the guy I want leading my movie.
Especially your action-adventure fantasy movie.
Right.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And next week we'll give you a proper whole shout out. Last week's answer was my pick, and it was The King's Speech. Those that got it correct: Anne Maria Germa, Scott Calgaro, Kristen Dew, Shane Owens, Troy Heinrichs, Tommy Lynch, Craig Schermerhorn, Wally Kulik, Amy Hutchinson, and Michael Lonergan.
Oh, excuse me, Aaron. I believe it's Shane Owens.
I'm sorry. And it's also Amy Hutchinson.
Hutchinson.
I did not know she was Chinese, but apparently there's no N.
So who's that Chinese?
Hutchinson.
Jeez. Hey, I'm the resident racist here. You chill out.
This week it is Scotty's turn, so if you think you know it, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Here is Yo clip.
Going to give us a reputation.
Sir?
What?
Are we being too literal?
No, you fool. We're following orders. We were told to comb the desert, so we're combing it.
Found anything yet? Nothing yet, sir. How about you?
Not a thing, sir.
What about you guys? We ain't found shit.
All right.
That's such a visual pull.
We'll see what happens. Now let's go to reviews, where we review any new releases. Justin, what is The Seventh Son, and how much did it suck?
Before I get into its problems. Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Bodrov. It stars, of course, Jeff Bridges, Julianne Moore, and Ben Barnes. It's a story of young Thomas, who's apprenticed to the local spook to learn to fight evil spirits. His first great challenge comes when the powerful Mother Malkin escapes her confinement while the spook is away. The problem with Seventh Son is that it's not terrible enough to be bad, and it's not really cool enough to be good. It rides that middle ground of it's just average. It's worth, if you're a fan, a diehard fan of fantasy, you should watch it, because it does have some fun visual elements going on, and some of the action sequences can be entertaining. But for the most part, it's just slow. It's boring. I so quickly grew tired of Jeff Bridges' voice in it and these tics that his character had. Julianne Moore, she is a beautiful woman, but she is nowhere near capable of playing a villainess like the way that Charlize Theron did in Snow White and the Huntsman. Frankly, what this movie reminded me of more was the Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters movie that came out not that long ago with Gemma Arterton and Jeremy.
But that was fun.
Do what?
Jeremy Renner. But that was fun. Yeah.
Well, that movie was fun because what it did is it took a silly premise and then it really just ran with that silliness and kind of embraced it. Whereas this film is really, you could tell that it wants to be, you know, it wants to be Lord of the Rings. It wants to be Conan. It wants to be Game of Thrones. But there's just not enough money for sets and costumes and special effects to make it that good. The performances just aren't that strong enough. And frankly, the story has been done over and over and over again. Now, this is based on a book called The Spook's Apprentice, written by Joseph Delaney. The books may be more interesting, but the film based on it, it's just average at best. And I'm giving it a 5, and that's just kind of being generous, but there was enough pretty things on screen to warrant a couple of points. I was really kind of wishing I just had saved my money.
All right, and Better Call Saul is the new AMC series. It's like a spinoff of Breaking Bad. And it goes back and tells the prequel story of Saul, but he's known as Jimmy. Slippery Jimmy, which I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't know, man. It's basically a prequel, and you're finding out how he became. In Breaking Bad, he was a slimy criminal lawyer. And when I say criminal lawyer, he's actually a criminal who's also a lawyer. And this is telling the story of how he got to that point. So you kind of know how it ends if you watch Breaking Bad. If you don't, then hey, it's all new. The show started off with showing him where he is today, and then it flashes back, and we start to get his story. How many of us watched the first two episodes? I did.
I did.
Scott did. Justin? Oh,
well, I didn't watch the second one. I watched the first one.
Okay. Did you watch it?
They're sitting on my DVR.
Okay, well, then that would be
I did not.
I will tell you, the first episode was really boring, I thought, personally. Didn't get into it. Second episode picked up quite a bit. It's just not a show that I'm really excited about yet, but I'll probably keep watching. I wish I could get more into it. I think Bob Odenkirk does a nice job, I guess, but he's just not a leading man to me. I just feel like he's just a character that belongs as a supporting role. There's some guys that belong in supporting roles.
I loved it.
You loved it?
I loved it.
What did you love? I shouldn't. That sounded condescending. What did you love, Scott?
There's a couple things I loved. First off, you're right, it did start a little slow, but I love how it wrapped up the first episode anyway. There's a really interesting dynamic that I didn't see coming that I thought was really interesting, and I'm really eager to see where they're going with that. Again, haven't watched the second episode to see if they've touched on that more.
The second one was very strong.
Was it?
A lot better, yeah.
What I loved the most about this, whether how boring you think it was beautifully shot. There were some awesome camera angles, camera shots. There was an homage to Network that I actually saw before they upfront referenced it that I thought was awesome. There were so many cool, interesting camera angles that I wasn't expecting to see, and I just really, I almost want to watch it again just to see those shots again.
It was very cinematic, but there's nothing for me, nothing going on that in those shots. Just it's pretty. All right.
Well, that's my favorite thing about it. I still found myself really entertained the whole time, and I was so tired. It was like the 9 o'clock for us, and I was beat. Had a long day, and I stayed up and watched the whole thing. And I'm surprised I did. That's how into it I am. Normally, I would just shut it off, you know, if I'm bored, and I wasn't bored. I was entertained.
All right, and last review is the one, Jupiter Ascending, that Justin cannot wait to tell you what it's about. Justin, what is Jupiter Ascending about?
All right, well, this one was written and directed by the Wachowskis, Andy and Lana, starring Channing Tatum, Mila Kunis, Eddie Redmayne, and Sean Bean. In a bright and colorful future, a young destitute caretaker gets targeted by the ruthless son of a powerful family who lives on a planet in need of a new heir. So she travels with a genetically engineered warrior to the planet in order to stop his tyrant reign. That is a very short description, and really so bare bones. It barely describes what this movie is about. It is a space opera, folks. It is operatic. It is amongst the stars. There are explosions. There are heroes. But ultimately, it's a story of just a young woman who thinks her life amounts to nothing and finding out that she's basically the queen of the universe. Aaron, going into this, you knew this was a Wachowski film.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that as well. And so I was pumped for it because they have yet to fail me. You're not in their corner nearly as much as I am. So what were your thoughts going into it? And then what did you think about the story once you got to see it in its fullness? Because those trailers tried to cram a lot.
They did. I'm not a Wachowski lover. I've said that before. I've liked some of their movies, loved The Matrix, liked Cloud Atlas, hated Speed Racer, hated the Matrix sequels. So I walked into this going, all right, I'll check it out. I knew it was delayed, so I was already kind of meh on it. I think it was really good. The story is basically Matrix reskinned. I mean, you have a woman who is the one, is what happens. It's a beautifully designed film, one of the most visually beautiful films I've ever seen. The story is one of those where I think they tried to do too much because there is a lot of exposition. There's some scenes where I just felt like, did you just write a paragraph because you have to explain some shit or what? A lot of exposition, probably more than is ever necessary. But I totally give them credit for at least attempting to do what people always bitch about, which is create something original. Like, there's a whole... I could see this being an expansive world of several films. It's almost like they were preparing for films in case we got a... Would you agree with that? In case we got a series of films so we could expand that universe. It was really well done, and critics be damned. I thought the story was actually very engaging. A little too much exposition and some of the dialogue was a little cheesy, but overall, very... interesting story.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of exposition in it, but they could have, if I think in lesser writers' hands, could have gone even further with it, because the depth of the history that you feel lying beneath the story in this film is really layered and complex, and it feels like that had someone else done it, they may have tried to tell you even more of it. But they didn't. I think they told you enough to get you going. Maybe for some people that was too much. For me, I almost felt like, wow, I wish I knew more, but I can completely understand why they didn't want to weigh the movie down with even more.
I thought it was already weighed down pretty heavy.
Yeah, it was already kind of heavy. But all in all, it felt like a lived-in universe. It felt like something that the Wachowskis had given an incredible amount of thought to. And even though it looks like the film is a financial flop and a bit of a critical flop as well, I'm really sad about that, because this is something that I think they could have moved on to more films, potentially Netflix type shows,
mm-hmm.
Books, who knows, games. This universe is so open. I'm really hoping that this isn't the end of it. But as far as the cast on this goes, you know, you've got your Channing Tatum, who really is kind of your it man right now in Hollywood. Mila Kunis, Eddie Redmayne, who's gotten a lot of talk because of his performance as Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything. And then you've got Sean Bean, the eternally killed off character in just about every movie he's in. How did their performances help this movie go along? Did they invest you more into it, or were there some of them that you just wished had maybe been recast?
I thought nobody really blew me away. The whole cast was pretty much just okay. This is one of those movies where the production outweighed the cast. It might have been to the cast detriment, because it was so beautiful. It was hard to take focus away from the characters at points. Tatum, I thought, was okay. I mean, he's a charming guy no matter what he's doing, even when he's got elf ears. I did like Kunis. I know she's gotten a lot of flack from the movie. I mean, people are saying she's bad. I don't think she's bad at all. I think she seemed like she was over her head, which is exactly what the character should be. The only thing I thought was a little rushed was the romance. But once, even though I thought they jumped into it a little bit, you know, when they were in the romantic scenes, I really thought it worked. I thought they have a natural chemistry. So for me, the cast worked, but it just worked fine. Redmayne was fine. Nobody blew me away. Nobody.
I liked Red Mean quite a bit, because sometimes these space opera villains can go over the top with constant yelling and gesticulation, where he was very much the opposite, very reserved, quiet to the point of almost being really too quiet. But I liked that kind of menace that a more silent villain will give you. And I thought Mila Kunis was great. She very much played the overwhelmed person who suddenly finds out that, oh yeah, there's not just, aliens out there, but I may be the queen of them. Channing Tatum, he's fine. He did a decent job. Could somebody else done it better? Probably. But I liked him. He's got an underlying charm to him that I think just carries through everything he does. The one actor or actress that I really liked and wished we'd seen more of was Tuppence Middleton, who played one of the three siblings that are at the heart of this interstellar family. I really enjoyed her performance.
Is that the sister? Was that the sister?
Yes.
She was, yeah, okay. Of all of them, she's the only one that really stood out, because she had some character ticks that were really, really interesting.
But as he said, this film has got a lot of beautiful special effects. All in all, did you think the production quality on this matched or improved what we've seen lately in films?
I think it was gorgeous. It's one of those movies that you have to see. I think you have to see just because on the big screen, just because of the visuals. And I've heard the 3D is great. I didn't see it in 3D.
Yeah, the 3D is. It's really nicely done.
Yep. Beautiful, beautiful canvas. Very well art. Imagined. I mean, it was just an expansive world. Loved it. Absolutely beautiful.
Yep. Very complex. There's hints of Star Wars in the visuals in this. There's some Battlestar. There's a lot of things that you can draw comparisons to, but it is dense. And it is beautiful. So as far as the music goes, the look of it goes, I don't think you're going to find much better probably until, December of this year.
I wonder what comes out then.
Little thing called Star Wars Episode 7, Force Awakens. What?
Why was napping all this time?
So 1 out of $10, Aaron, what would you give this film?
I actually really enjoyed it, and I was pleasantly surprised. Critics be damned. I give it 750.
Yeah, for me, as I've said many times, when it comes to films like this, fuck the critics. I gave it $9 out of $10, and that's it. If you want to read my review on the website, you can head over there and check that out, where I go into a little more detail.
And Anna Marie Germa sent us her thoughts. Really appreciate that. She just wanted to say, visually, it was a pretty amazing ride. The space set pieces were gorgeous, and the costuming was great. She's a little split on the cast. She does want to say, though, major props to the Wachowskis for making a hero quest story with a female lead. The story itself surprised her the most, actually in a good way. Sorry for the rambling. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Anna Marie. That's edited, but very nice thoughts. Appreciate it. Let's go to Blu-ray and Video on Demand, Scotty.
We got 4 on disc and 1 on Video on Demand. The first is Dumb and Dumber 2. This was released on February 17th. This is the actual true sequel to the original Dumb and Dumber, as opposed to the prequel that was stuck in there in the middle that was kind of not a great movie. But this takes place 20 years after the first adventure, where Lloyd and Harry go on a road trip to find Harry's newly discovered daughter who was given up for adoption. Aaron and I checked that one out and reviewed it back on episode 167. Aaron gave it $4. I gave it $6. Next up is Birdman, which, strange enough, none of us saw. This is the one with Michael Keaton.
I'm watching it this week.
Are you? Okay. Yep. I'd like to see it as well. This is the one where Michael Keaton plays an iconic superhero, but is now he's
Batman?
Kind of washed up. No, not Batman.
But there's no connection to Batman, because he's Batman.
Well, I haven't seen it yet.
He told me he's Batman.
He didn't talk like this in the trailer, so I don't know. But anyway, apparently they're doing a Broadway play based on the iconic superhero that he played in previous TV shows or movies, and it's supposed to be getting interesting reviews. So. Also, Aaron reviewed on episode 169, Theory of Everything. This is the film that's about the relationship between the famous physicist Stephen Hawking and his wife. Really looking forward to checking that one out as well. Last one is The Homesmen. Three women who have been driven mad by pioneer life are to be transported across the country by covered wagon by the pious, independent-minded Mary B. Cuddy, who in turn employs her low-life drifter George Briggs to assist her. It stars Tommy Lee Jones and Hilary Swank, so pretty good cast there. And last one I got is on Video On Demand only. This one comes out on February 13th. That's The Last 5 Years. It's based on the musical about a struggling actress and her novelist lover who each illustrate the struggle and deconstruction of their love affair.
I'm so moved. All right. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Brian, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't heard you in a while. I was just making sure you were still alive, man. I didn't know if you were...
Hey, well, y'all were running through quite a bit of movies.
All right. Well, we got an email a while back from Leo. He asked us, or said to us, hello, Hollywood Outside crew. He said to us, hello, Hollywood Outsider crew. I've been thinking about suggesting a topic for you guys to do on the show, and since award season is upon us, can we talk about would-be Oscar contenders from the past that flop with critics and moviegoers? The one example I want to mention is last year's failed Oscar bait vehicle, Diana, starring Naomi Watts in the lead role. With that, this is my pick for a topic, and I can't wait to see what you guys have to say, so take it away. Thanks, Leo. Before we get to that question, we're going to talk about this for a second, because we've all discussed it, the term Oscar bait. What does that mean to you?
I actually put a lot of work into this one. I came up with four things that make it an Oscar movie.
What are you, Justin, all of a sudden?
No, I'll try to be quick.
I'm going to go take a leak.
If a movie does one of these four things, I consider it an Oscar bait movie. First one, it tugs at your heartstrings way too hard. Just for the sake of tugging at your heartstrings. Oscar bait. Second one, has a character in it, a main character, that is either handicapped, sick or dying, gay or oppressed.
Or all of them.
Or all of the above, right? Third, it contains some kind of controversial theme, especially one from our history.
And you mean white people are evil.
Right, like that one, yeah. All right. Or, lastly, it appears to have an outstanding performance from one or more actors, yet a semi-interesting plot. I think you do one of those four things. To me, that's what Oscar bait movie is. Agree or disagree?
Counterpoint. That's pretty astute. Does anybody
sounds comprehensive to me.
Mm-hmm. That seems pretty,
That's pretty much most of the terms on my list.
Yeah, I mean, a handicapped heroin addict is abused by a child, only to find out he, you know.
Abused by a child.
One of those. Ends up, you know, I don't know, coaching a basketball team or something. Gets the
retarded
state,
basketball team.
Exactly. Gets to the state finals.
And one of them
dies.
Gay. One of them's gay.
One of them's gay. And then dies on the court minutes before they score the win. That's Oscar bait.
That's a movie. Let's get to filming.
I'm sure it's been made at some point. That's very good, Scott. So what are your 4 points again? You got performance?
One performance. One or two performances.
Mm-hmm.
Tugging at your heartstrings. Characters handicapped, sick, dying, gay, or oppressed. And a controversial theme.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it. Now, why do you guys think that we call it Oscar bait? Like, why is there this term? Because trust me, we're not the only show that ever uses it. It's been used for years. Do you think they make these movies in order to? Do you think they're sitting around going, "What's it going to take to get an Oscar? What do we got to put together? What scripts do we have to get us in the race?" Do you guys think they do that? Hollywood execs and whatnot.
You know, it could be that I think probably it started off with studios making earnest films of this type and got an Oscar here, got an Oscar there, and then they started getting a couple more. You know, it doesn't take much for people to sense a pattern developing. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you feel like instead of making a film that hopefully the Oscar voters will like, they started making them intentionally for them to like.
I think that it's getting to the point where I kind of wonder if they're not just the same kind of movies every year. You know what I mean? As much as I love the Oscars, the reason that it's such a generic, cliched title, Oscar bait, is because they're always the same kind of movies. Like, they never really stretch it out. I mean, I remember when Return of the King got Best Picture. You remember that? I mean, Justin, I know that's probably the 1 year you watched the whole show. Return of the King wins Best Picture. Everybody goes apeshit saying, finally, they're going to acknowledge fantasy films. That didn't happen. I mean, every year it's the same kind of movies that Scott basically gave us the four directives.
To me, it was finally when they recognized Peter Jackson's work. I mean, when Fellowship of the Ring lost to A Beautiful Mind, if I wasn't so lazy, I would have been out rioting.
I would take a stand if I didn't have to get up.
I would definitely have taken a stand, but I got shit to do. But people kept saying, no, they're going to wait. They'll wait to the last one to recognize them, and that's exactly what they seem to do. Was it the best film of that year? I would think so, but I'm sure there's others out there that didn't. But yeah, it's kind of like those Oscars where you just feel like it was given to them because the body of work, they were finally awarding them something, as opposed to it maybe actually being that year it was the best.
Does that bother you? Because I know some of us, not me, I love these kind of movies. Brian, you kind of like these movies. Do you guys ever see a movie and go, man, I don't want to see that. All they want is to win an Oscar.
I don't ever look at it like that. I mean, it bugs me more that you give an award to, say, Return of the King, because, well, you're acknowledging the whole trilogy, and that's really what what that was for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like giving an award. You know, the idea is to award the best, what the Academy says is the best movie. I hardly think Return of the King was the best movie that year. But it's been snubbed to a pretty good extent for the previous, two movies. It's almost like, well, we've got to give them something, so we give it to them, and it is a huge accomplishment, and it looks great, and all this other stuff, and we are kind of acknowledging the whole body of work. As far as seeing a movie and going, they're just making this to get an Oscar. The thought never crosses my mind. I mean, now do I look at a movie and go, okay, well, it is, we are, you kind of, well, we're getting into Oscar season, and these more, like I said, the ones that tug at your hearts, the ones that kind of give a social commentary on some topic, race, sex, both, disease, whatever, they do all tend to come out towards the end of the year and into January. So,
yeah, but I think the question is more like chicken or the egg kind of thing. Did they make the movie and then decide to release it at that time, or did they, have this idea and say, we're going to make this because we want to release it during Oscar season?
Because there is financially, there's it's a financially viable option, because if you can get awards consideration, you can get a little bit more money.
Well, yeah. I think at our theater here in town, they're doing the Oscar thing where you can watch all 10 Oscar nominations, all day long if you want to.
Definitely get you noticed where you might not have been.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of those movies that I probably never would have noticed otherwise if they weren't nominated. In my mind, even though a lot of the movies are, like we say, Oscar bait, it still makes me kind of want to check them out and see if they're right or not.
Yeah, and you throw in the word Oscar, Oscar nominated actor, Oscar nominated movie, mm-hmm. Oscar nominated director. It helps sell future projects.
Okay. And to follow that up, Marcus Shelton actually posted, he had a question. What exactly is Oscar bait? Films that are excellently directed, films that are expertly put together. The whole premise of Oscar bait is flawed. I don't agree with that. I do think there are studios that put together, that craft films or organize them to come out specifically for awards consideration. That to me is Oscar bait. Mm-hmm. I think if you just make a good movie, you put it out whenever. And I do think some films are constructed. Just like there's a lot of big budget action spectacles that are put down on paper so that they know, all right, we're going to hit all these demographics. That's going to sell. Same thing happens with awards films. There are several movies that they put down. They put all these things in place thinking this will get us awards consideration. Therefore, we can turn a profit because it'll be successful in the awards circuit. That happens. I firmly believe that. So speaking more of the Oscars themselves, what do you guys think have been some of the Oscars' biggest missteps, in your opinion, either with the awards or the show itself?
Really, with some of the biggest missteps for me is it's got to do more with the hosts. They try to – a little too hard sometimes with some of the hosts. It's one of those – Anne Hathaway and Hugh Jackman.
James Franco, not Hugh Jackman. It was Anne Hathaway and James Franco.
Yeah, that's right. I just got the musical thing with Hugh Jackman in there. He did have a number with her. I don't know whether it was on her year or his year, whatever. But anyway,
I can see how you get them confused. They look alike.
It blurs together. And his wasn't very good either, for that matter. It just too many musical numbers and that kind of stuff. But James Franco was like a zombie. Anne Hathaway. It's one of those things, like, I know why they were doing it. It was just a younger, trying to draw in a younger audience. I get it. But, you know, the Oscars is about class. It's a little bit more refined and good or bad. It is a little bit more snooty. Get somebody that's got a little bit more age to them. Steve Martin, to me, is one of the best hosts they've ever had. Mm-hmm. Billy Crystal's great. I know he's pretty much past his window for that. But Steve Martin, the year that Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin co-hosted together was fantastic. And even though he's a nut job, Alec Baldwin would still be a good host, I think.
I think Seth MacFarlane was a good host, too.
I think maybe some of the ways they went were not a good use of his talent, I guess. But I thought overall it was a much better job than what a lot of people were expecting.
And I got to disagree with you, Brian. I honestly think Hugh Jackman was one of my favorites. I thought he did a great job.
Too many musical numbers for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I like singing. It's okay. And he's a great singer. Who would have known?
I'm not going to disagree with you there.
And he's beautiful.
Oh, that he is. He is a beautiful man.
It's really unfair. It's really unfair that one man should be that good looking and talented.
Yep.
It's kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with the awards is some of the actual awards. And we've talked about this a little bit in years past, of failing to nominate stuntmen is huge with me. I really think not just stunts, but I think the stuntmen specifically should be recognized during the show on stage, because all these movies we get excited about, they risk their lives to do that. And I don't realize not as much as they used to because of special effects, but there's a lot of practical effects. The stuff in Fast and Furious is amazing, and those guys risk their lives to do that.
I do agree with you, but how do you quantify that? I mean, do you say this guy won because he risked his life more, or this was a more dangerous stunt, or do you look at like which one was the best looking stunt, and is that a, you know, more of the stuntman's job that made that so work so well, or the person, the crew that set it up?
I think you'd probably have best stunt choreographer or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do you award the stunt man? Like, this was the most daring thing?
I think just like you reward the choreographer or the writer or the actors. It's the same thing. Just because you don't see you actually see their body and they CGI out their face or they don't show their face, but they're the one in the car. They're the one taking the risk, and I think that should be rewarded or be acknowledged.
I understand, but
showing a quick piece of film.
No. And I agree with you. I think there should be some kind of recognition, but I'm kind of trying to play the other angle about maybe why they haven't done this. Because number one, you know, you can kind of measure choreography from an artistic standpoint. I think this worked better here or something like that.
I think part of it is because if you award certain things specifically on the show, then you start doing it for every other job duty. I mean, at some point, maybe the caterer's getting involved. You don't want that. I get it. So they just have a generic category called best stunts and best special effects. I get that. But I think with stunts, it's very similar to acting. And I think there should be a larger category for that. That's just a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
I just, for what they do, you know, they risk their lives a lot more than an actor does by, you know, all right, I cried. Okay, well, that guy just jumped off a bridge in his car and...
On fire.
I find that far more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably cried when he hit, you know? They just didn't capture it because they CGI'd it out.
That wasn't tears. That was awesome juice.
That was awesome. Awesome juice. And I also think... And I know it'll never happen, but I think they should incorporate genre categories, just like they do with animated films. If you're not going to recognize, you want to keep the best movie's always going to be a drama, because it almost always is. It's going to be some heavy drama that you're talking about, one of your 5 points. Then have something that maybe you just call it best genre, because you've got animated. You thought it was important enough to separate animated films. Why don't you separate genre films?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know why that hasn't happened yet. Is anybody on board with me, or you think I'm just being stupid?
No, I mean, I think the preponderance of dramas being nominated as opposed to, you know, other genres of film is it's sad, but it's nothing new. You know, when it comes to science fiction, fantasy, horror, or comedy, those have always been the whipping genres compared to drama. Or, you know, if you want to compare it to books, you know, literary fiction. That's just, for some reason, drama is what draws in, I think, the most noses in the air. And critics love to hoist that nose in the air. If it was up to me, the Avengers, that would have been a Best Picture winner.
I think it
but
should.
But they don't call me.
Just because it's fun doesn't mean that it shouldn't be a Best Picture. You know what I mean? And for whatever reason, that's always been the way. And I think it's always been the wrong way. How you don't acknowledge some of these more fan favorite films is just beyond me.
It's not like any less work went into those movies.
I know. But
in fact, in
probably
a lot of
hell
cases,
of a lot
more
work.
Yeah.
Those are popcorn films, and too many people had fun. Can't have that.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I love those movies, but I also love the fan favorite movies. I mean, that's kind of why we do the podcast, because there's so many snooty podcasts out there where they, you know, film is just an artistic way to express blah, blah. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and Spider-Man can't be involved with other characters.
Hey,
and
you know what? Nobody likes you, Scott. Nobody likes you.
And I don't know how you would really quantify
He's
this
lonely.
Into necessarily an award. I don't know if, I mean, maybe best, you could throw it into best movie, but take a movie like Taken, where it's a low budget movie, doesn't really expect to do a whole lot, but it was, let's just say, because it was released in January, I believe it was, throughout the year has
caused February.
Okay. Even still, it's 11 months or a year's worth basically of creating just a whole pop culture, you know, spin on stuff. I mean, it's just created all sorts. It's had an effect on culture and pop culture in general. So how do you, you know, in a way that should have been nominated as one of the best movies of the year. I mean, okay. So, you know, whatever, some other movie made me cry. Some other one touched on some social issues, but you've got a movie that overachieved.
Like a dark
horse
award.
Perfect example, Pulp Fiction lost out Best Picture to Forrest Gump. How the fuck does Pulp Fiction lose out to Forrest Gump? Forrest Gump had a mentally handicapped character who overcame great odds.
And his best friend was black, who had a lot of
but to this day, was Pulp Fiction not more impactful on our culture?
Shrimp kebabs.
Yeah, there are a lot of films that I think impact society on a much greater level that never get the recognition by the Academy, quote unquote, than those films that, you know, you just kind of forget as soon as the Academy Awards are over, you know, or may not forget, but they don't, you know, they don't stick around in the culture. They're not quoted, you know, Taken. Who doesn't instantly think of, you know, I have a particular set of skills? You know, sure, maybe Taken wasn't as amazing as whatever won Best Picture that year, but I can guarantee you more people watched it, more people talked about it, and it impacted our society and culture to a much greater degree.
And just remember the year Shakespeare in Love beat out Saving Private Ryan. What?
Yep.
That's one of the biggest travesties. And don't get me wrong, Shakespeare in Love, fine film, no problem with it. But goddamn, really? You're talking about what's considered by many the greatest war film of all time, and
Yeah, or look at The Dark Knight. You know, every other award committee out there, whether it was the PGA, the DGA, whatever, all of them gave props to The Dark Knight for Best Picture, Best Director, and Heath Ledger. Did the Academy do the same? Fuck no, they didn't.
Well, he actually won Best Supporting Actor.
What I meant was the film itself wasn't up for Best Picture. It was a fantastic picture, but it wasn't up there? Come on. Just because it had Batman?
Well, but he did win. I was actually surprised. Do you think if Heath Ledger wouldn't have died, do you think he would have won?
No, I think that performance, live or dead, you know, living or dead, that performance was stunning.
No, I don't think he's arguing that. I think he's saying,
do you think he wins that award had he lived?
Right.
I think he would have. Dying, that was just the nail in the coffin. Oh, see what I did there?
Wow.
They just locked it in.
Yeah.
What, too soon?
I think so. I actually think that might be too soon, Brian. All right, finally, Leo's question.
Don't I get a turn?
Scott, if you don't talk when we're talking, I don't know what to tell you.
You guys never stop.
Raise your fucking hand.
Raise my hand?
Trust me.
What?
I feel you, buddy.
I want to talk about...
Shut up, Brian. Give me a corner.
See, this is why I don't talk. Why has Leonardo DiCaprio never won? I think
he's been nominated several times, though.
Four times. He lost to Jamie Foxx, Forest Whitaker, Tommy Lee Jones, and Matthew McConaughey. That dude needs to get recognized. I'm just bummed out because I think he's
Maybe he would have tried a little bit harder.
Yeah.
A little better harder.
Give him some Vanguard Award, some Lifetime Achievement type thing or something. You know?
Already?
Because he's not good enough to actually win it. So the best actor.
Just saying,
give him something. He deserves something. Give him a little something and just tell him to go on.
Tell him to stop acting in years where there's somebody better.
Stop making movies like The Aviator.
That would be a good start. That movie was not great.
What about there was the one year that Denzel Washington and Halle Berry won Best Actor and Best mm-hmm. Actress or Female Actor, whichever.
And Sidney Poitier got like a Lifetime Achievement Award. It was very...
Yeah. Yeah.
Diverse.
It's also known as Brian's gratuitous. Favorite Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
What's
your question?
Because I got the impression that even Denzel Washington felt offended by that.
By what?
By it felt like that they won the award because they were trying to do the diversity thing that year.
I think they all gave fantastic performances.
I do too.
I think they won on them.
But if you go back and listen to that acceptance speech, he does not look really happy. He looks like he's going through the motions. Like, yeah, you guys did this because you know.
I don't believe that, but if that's
maybe he'd take a shit,
huh?
Maybe he'd take a shit. I know that makes me scrunches up my face.
He was there for a long time. He's like, give me this fucking award. I gotta go.
All right.
I'm King Kong.
Drop a load.
Ain't nobody got nothing on me. That's what he did. I don't think that there was a lot of snubbing this year, but. I think someone got nominated for Best Picture, and there's a whole lot of that stuff. There's snubs every year. Ben Affleck wasn't nominated for Best Director. It's just, not everything is about racism. Sometimes it's just because they're idiots. It's really that simple. But the guy that played Martin Luther King, David, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, he was fantastic, should have been nominated, but what do I know? So finally, Leo's question. Every year, now that are we done with your personal ploy to get Leonardo DiCaprio a Best Actor Oscar? I'm sure he will. He's a fine young man. Every year, there are several movies that scream Oscar bait, then disappear once voters and audiences actually see them. Since that can be a bit complicated to find if you don't really follow these every year, you can also mention Oscar contenders that failed for you personally. What have been the most notable Oscar flops for you?
God, where do you even fucking begin? I have to... You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. The Oscars is not an award show that I generally watch. I don't know if it's because I just don't care about an awards show or if it's because it's fucking interminably long and just it needs to be trimmed quite a bit. But usually when these movies win, they don't really do it for me. I didn't think The Departed was really that good of a film.
Oh,
and I like Leo. I like Scorsese, but I just don't think The Departed was that good of a movie. Granted, that year didn't really have shit as far as good movies are concerned.
You must be the other guy.
Yeah. Well,
what did it go? What did it win over that year?
It won over Babel, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Queen.
Mm.
So maybe of those five, it was the most interesting, but still, it's not one of those movies that pushes me over the top, but really probably the one that I have to this day, I don't understand the love it gets is $1 Million Baby.
Mm.
Didn't like it then. Don't like it now.
Yeah, it didn't.
I don't understand how it got all the adoration it did. I mean, it won over Ray and Sideways, both films that I thought were so much better and so much more interesting.
I think she was great. But I don't think the movie was Best Picture either.
Yeah.
But
I mean, was this Clint Eastwood's first directorial effort? I don't know.
No. He's been directing for about 30 or 40 years.
Oh, I didn't know he was much of a director until that movie came out.
He's been doing it decades, man. Decades. Decades.
And Fuck a Beautiful Mind. I still say that.
I can't.
Fellowship should have gotten that one.
Scotty?
What about, I mean, I'm going super recent, but why was the Lego movie not nominated
for that? Was huge. Animated. Huge snub. How do you not nominate, like, the most popular animated movie of the year?
Because it's popular? I mean, is that...
I guess, yeah. That's the only thing I can think of, because everything about that movie is awesome.
Oh, jeez.
Because yeah. I think because it had Lego in the title.
You think that's what it is?
I think people instantly wrote it off as an infant movie.
I wrote it off after 15 minutes.
Oh, that movie was so good.
Nah. Anything?
Brian, I hope you accidentally get a Lego shoved up your butt.
Who says there's anything accidental about it?
That's true.
What about Limitless? Weren't we kind of expecting that one to be? Didn't we call that one Oscar bait?
It seemed like it. Didn't make it.
And yeah, I was that one shocked me. Older ones, Regarding Henry was a movie that I loved and didn't get any. Didn't get
nominated.
That's
one I consider that Oscar. Like it felt like it was made for the awards.
Yeah, yeah. I really am. That
was
one
that Retard
me.
Or Amnesia? What was that one again?
It was Retardnesia.
Yeah, bullet to the head, right?
Yeah, oxygen, and he became somewhat of a mute for a while, and yeah. It,
sounds like a Steven Seagal movie so far. Took a bullet to the head, got amnesia.
I had a couple that I thought were going to be Oscar bait, but I'm not a huge fan of the movies. Cuba Gooding Jr.'s Radio.
Oh, yeah. That's a good
He thing. Went Simple Jack in that one.
Oh, Scotty.
And The Soloist with Jamie Foxx.
That one I really thought, yeah, absolutely. Was that Robert Downey Jr. too? Or was it?
Yes. Yeah, he played like the guy that stopped him on the street and recognized his talent.
That totally seemed like it was going to be an Oscar movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't very good.
And
I didn't like it.
And why wasn't Mr. Banks nominated?
I don't know.
Oscar bait written all over it. And I love that movie.
What's that?
Saving Mr. Banks. I said Mr.
Yeah,
Banks.
Yeah, what movie was that?
That was out last year. It was about Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins.
It was a great movie.
Oh, yeah. Shit, I forgot to see that one.
You were too busy waiting for aliens to land, apparently.
I was probably watching Cloud Atlas again and again.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Justin, I can't recommend that one enough. It's a really beautiful movie.
Scott, he's not going to watch it. He's not
going to
watch it.
I want to watch it, kind of.
No, you don't.
Sort of.
That's kind of a lie. Everything you just said was a lie. What about you, Brian? Are you done, Scott?
Yeah, I'm done.
No Leo DiCaprio movie?
Did you say DiCaprio?
I wasn't going to, but I did.
Keanu Reeves hadn't been given an Oscar either, so... Leo needs to wait.
That one is absolutely accurate.
What's that?
I didn't hear. Keanu Reeves hasn't gotten one either. Best performance of whoa. Brian?
Yeah, I've got to echo, you know, A Beautiful Mind. I don't understand it was just a boring movie for me. I don't understand all the love for it. Kind of sticking with the beautiful theme. I didn't see the movie till after the Oscars. And when the guys... exuberant just acceptance of the award, Roberto Benigni for A Life is Beautiful. I'm mm-hmm. like, all right, I'll give this one. It's not typically my type of movie, but I'll give it a shot. It took me three or four times to finally finish it. I kept falling asleep every time I watched it.
Didn't he walk like over the seats and shit?
He stood up like on the back on the arms or something like that, stood up and was clapping and jumping up and down, and it was just the guy was just over, still to this day is just the most excited recipient I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't you know, can't fault him for that. That's he really is he's probably the main reason I watched the movie. I probably wouldn't have watched it otherwise. But it just all this, you know, there was all that talk about it and everything. I just didn't, that was just one I didn't like. And gosh, I don't know. Slumdog Millionaire, wasn't too impressed with that.
Yeah, I liked it, didn't love it.
I didn't think it was all that hype that it got. My God.
No.
Jesus, you throw a few Indians in there and all of a sudden,
couple?
Well, a whole country of them. Yeah.
I mean, hell, it became, now that's just what people call Indians now, sadly. Slumdogs. That's the go-to joke.
There you go. There you go. Culturally relevant.
Yeah.
Pop culturally relevant.
There you go. Boy, you just hit his list. Any more, Brian?
That's really about it.
My failed Oscar bait, Nicole Kidman as Grace Kelly in Grace of Monaco. I think it was last...
Is that a Lifetime movie?
It was last year. It was recently.
Oh.
No, it was out in the theaters, and it was not good. Just not good, and it was total Oscar bait. It was Nicole Kidman trying to be all Kidman-esque, where she just acts the shit out of whatever the story is. Not a fan of hers. I think she, you know, just like in her marriage, I think she was faking it. So I just don't think she's very good. Another one, Burlesque. That was like supposed to be a big deal. They were trying to, it's the next Chicago. No, it was not.
Wasn't that Cher?
Yep. It was shit. It was
shit. Christina Aguilera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awful movie. Awful. Awful movie. How Cher shows up and is not entertaining, I don't even understand how that's possible. Because for all her faults, she's entertaining. The goddamn Fountain, of course. Oh. My most hated movie ever. That's total... Oh,
did that win?
No, it didn't win shit.
Oh.
Because it sucked. So it didn't win or get nominated for anything. It sucked.
And why are you talking about it?
Because it's failed Oscar bait. It was made
You think
to
that
win.
Was Oscar bait?
Yes. Yes. Darren Aronofsky makes movies to try to win awards because he thinks he's smarter than all of us.
Yeah, I love that
including
movie.
Including you.
You can bite my dick.
Well, I'm not going to bite your dick. But
nom, nom, nom.
I hope somebody buys all the DVDs and lights them on fire. Nixon. Nixon's another one that was just not good.
Oh, it was boring. I watched it for school.
Don't you hate that? That movie sucked. And it's like obviously made to get Best Picture. Oh, we're telling the life of Nixon. Well, his life was shit. It was boring and sucked. And as far as like Oscar mistakes, Crash. How that won Best Picture, I'll never understand. Because it was just...
Because
it was a
controversial
okay.
topic.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, Scott, you really got this list down. Why don't you put that shit and we'll throw it in the show notes if you got it. Some of our listener thoughts. You want to hear what some of them thought?
Sure.
Yes, you do. Anna Maria Germa says the first one that comes to mind is Alexander with Colin Farrell.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Edward Lawrence says Sharknado 2. Aha, I see what you did there. Tommy Lynch, The New World. Pocahontas without the animation of scenery or characters. Did anybody see that?
You know, that's one Disney movie I think I missed.
It's not a Disney movie.
Pocahontas?
No, he's saying it's Pocahontas without the animation. He's a joke.
Oh.
These are jokes that he said.
Oh.
But you're so much funnier right now, Scott.
I know.
David McGrath says The Shipping News. That was a Kevin Spacey movie. I actually liked that movie, but it wasn't Oscar winning worthy. Craig Sherborne says Ishtar. Okay. Were they trying? Was that Oscar bait?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yep. Yep. It was. There was it's one of the notorious Oscar bait, you know, hyped up movies that just tanked at the box office.
Okay. Carlos Hernandez, he says The Counselor. Yeah, it was a terrific cast, and they were trying to make something, and it's just wasn't very good.
I have heard nothing but terrible things about that movie.
You should definitely watch it so you can feel like I feel when I watch The Fucking Fountain. Tammy Plain says Foxcatcher. Ooh, that one definitely is Oscar bait. She said it was very, very boring. Leo Logan, who this is his topic, said J. Edgar. DiCaprio did a good job in the role, but the movie suffers from humdrum storytelling. Did you like it?
Wasn't like 3 hours long, too?
It was 3 hours of him trying to win an Oscar that he'll never get, Scott.
Mm.
Never. And finally, Shane Owens said The Reader. I never saw it. Kate Winslet. And I think, didn't she win an Oscar for that? I think she won for that. So it was successful Oscar bait. She won. All right, let's go to emails. Remember to like us on Facebook. We have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group for movie or TV fans, not just for fans of the show. It's for anybody that likes the... Talk about movies. Just find us, and the link is in the show notes. You can review us on iTunes, and we'll read your review on the show. We actually have it set up now, so they will be emailed to us directly, no matter where in the country supposedly they are made. So review us. Let's go to Justin first. Read your email, sir.
All right, well, this one's from Tommy. He is from Bathgate, Scotland. Do you want me to read this with my...
Do it in Scottish. Yes.
Oh, no.
Scottish accent?
Do it.
Oh, no.
Did it!
For the sake of our listeners, I won't do it.
No.
Morning,
it.
Gents.
Keep doing it.
Just finished listening to the latest episode and loved it, as always. Thanks to you all for taking the time to do this. I won't say it's the highlight of my week, but I do look forward to every Thursday morning when I can download the podcast and catch up on your latest ramblings. Apart from when you attempt to do Scottish accents less than 5 minutes in, oh, that hurt. But always great to hear quotes from So I Married an Axe Murderer. Thanks again. Looking forward to next Thursday. Cheers, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy. We appreciate all you do.
Oh, man.
But does he have a big head?
He does. Go upstairs and lay on your huge pillow. Brian, I think it's your turn.
I think that's more leprechaun. That's more leprechaun.
They're Scottish. Go ahead.
I'd be going to... I think it'd be Lucky Charms.
Oh, I got the rainbow in my pants. Brian.
You'll notice, Tommy, I am not partaking this time out of respect.
He's a Scottist.
Scottist.
Brian, read your fucking email.
Hey, waiting for y'all to quit doing bad Lucky Charms impersonations. All right, this is from Craig Shermahorn. He says, this topic actually prompted a discussion with my wife and I on how much more difficult it must be to create chemistry in something like animated films or non-live action where you have to actually create the nonverbal communication, the looks, the facial expressions, the dialogue, and all the things that you would normally rely on actors for, and then started to talk about who has pulled it off well and who did not quite make it. God, that's a long sentence. Anyway, how much is relying upon the voice actors? How much can you get out of facial expressions, etc.? Carl and Ellie from Up, The Incredibles, certain Muppets, then others that failed. Good discussion. Also, non-romantic chemistry, good and bad. Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte, ton of chemistry in 48 Hours. Riggs and Murtaugh. Do those movies work if the chemistry isn't there? Cruise and Hoffman, no chemistry, never bought it. Cruise and Gooding Jr., chemistry. Made up for cold, flat lack of chemistry with Zellweger.
Oh, you shut up. I ain't listening to that. He completes her.
That's right. Yeah.
Cynical world.
Yeah. Firth and Rush in King's Speech was palpable. I think we were kind of staying more in the romantic.
Yeah, we're going to do buddies at some point, but that was just romantic.
And for the record, Riggs and Murtaugh, they were probably doing it.
They were definitely
doing it.
Those
were just in all the scenes we didn't get to see.
They were definitely. That's Lethal Weapon was not referring to a pistol.
Well, that would have made it
Oscar
bait.
Was in his underwear and naked in the bathtub quite a bit.
Just saying. Riggs, so, come on Riggs is dripping right off screen.
Mm-hmm. He's like, your hair is so messy. Come here and straighten it out in the bath water.
You ain't too old for this.
I mean, didn't we have a scene of them two in the bathroom where Riggs or Murtaugh's in the tub with a little...
He's on the toilet. He went in there when he's on the toilet.
Riggs is on the toilet, right?
They're so close. He like comes on in when he's on the toilet. They're definitely doing it. When he's on the...
He doesn't come on him.
That's what I mean. It's like, ew.
Why are you guys so disgusting?
You said it.
Can you be adults for an entire episode? Is that possible?
Then that would be boring.
Scott, read your email.
This one comes from Kristen Dew. She says, as always, another great podcast. My pick for awkward movie couple may be a less popular one, but I never bought Minnie Driver and Matt Damon together in Good Will Hunting.
Aww,
especially when you put the relationship up against the chemistry Matt had with both Ben Affleck and Robin Williams. I actually kind of agree with her.
You think he should have been doing it with Ben Affleck instead?
No, maybe it was Minnie Driver's accent that threw me off. I didn't think her accent was good at all. I don't know. Anyway, she goes on to say, I think this would also be a great topic to apply to television as well.
We will.
Especially since you can compare a couple's chemistry from the same show. Example, Joey and Dawson versus Joey and Pacey. Okay, I know that is really a cheesy example, but you get the point. Thank you for the wonderful weekly entertainment. I'm a hoe for life, Kristen.
We will
Joey
be doing
Dawson
the...
Pacey? What is that show?
That is Dawson's Creek.
Ugh, I don't want to wait for our lives to be over.
Okay, you can't say, ugh. And then followed by never watched it.
Ugh.
Don't be that guy. Nobody likes that guy.
Never watched it. You know why? Because
I'm a man.
Because I'm a douche is what the answer is. He had a rocking forehead. Like that forehead was.
Still does.
He's better when he's making fun of himself.
Is that why you like Scott so much?
Mm-hmm. All right. Scott Calgaro wrote in. He said,
Calgaro.
Hey, whatever. Scotch wrote in. Hey, hoes, I feel like I need to redress a serious oversight in your Movie Psychos episode 174. There were some great choices made by all, but how is it even remotely possible that not one single person, listener or hoe, mentioned Rutger Hauer's portrayal of John Ryder in The Hitcher? Well, I just want to say, if you had went on Facebook, you could have wrote it down your damn self, but that's beside the point. That movie freaked me out the first time I saw it, and my skin still crawls with each viewing. From the finger in the French fries to the woman forced into a great imitation of a hammock between two semis, this dude just radiates.
Is that a sexual position?
That shit crazy. I don't think so.
He's the hammock between two semis.
He's basically the Terminator without all the cyborg attachments. To me, he's the quintessential movie nutbag. Just had to make sure that one made your list. Fun show as always. Keep it up. And yes, I nominated you guys for the podcast awards. Rock on, hoes. Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask. I thought a part of what we were doing with that discussion was to find a psycho who seemed normal.
Yep.
And then kind of led us into their psychosis.
Yeah, he was fucking kind of
Rutger Hauer. He's kind of batshit from word go.
The jump.
Yeah. I mean, he got in the car, he smoked a cigarette, and then he tried to kill him. So when was he normal? Exactly.
Yeah, he's not lulling anybody.
Yeah, it's not like Clark Griswold all of a sudden turned into, you know, John Ryder.
Oh, I want to see that movie.
I mean, it's Rutger Hauer. The guy just looks psycho.
Yeah, if C. Thomas Howell would have watched any Rutger Hauer movies, he would have known. This fucker's crazy.
Exactly.
He's nuts. All right, remember to stay to the credits for outtakes. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com is our website. Tweet us on @H_Outsider. Facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Email us at feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher radio app or through our RSS feed. Next week, I will not be here, so it'll be these three fucktards once more. Scott has asked if he could please host. Damn near begged.
What?
Yeah, it's kind of begged.
It was pretty sad.
That's between you three, so I don't really care what you guys do. That's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Thanks to Justin, Brian, and Scott for being here, as always. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Word to your mother.
Justin, yours wasn't really convincing.
Enthusiastic? I'm sorry.
Can we try again?
Woohoo!
That's what I'm talking about. And I also, somebody's apparently getting a little message. I do want to say my son's birthday is right around the corner, and he does listen to the show, so I want to say happy birthday, son. You are fantastic.
Well, I didn't know we could do that.
Happy birthday, Zach.
There you go. You can do whatever you want, man. Anything you want. It can't be like your cousin. It has to be somebody close.
How do you know me and my cousin ain't close?
Remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.
Bow chicka wow wow.
That's what you play when you think of your cousin?
Hey, let's get it on. Just kidding. Bow, bow, bow.
I'm coming home. I'm coming home.
God. Well, if I didn't hate the song before, I fucking hate it now.
You're welcome.
Eazy-E is in effect and got the 8-ball rolling.
Oh, I like that.
I was...
Fuck the police. You look focused.
I'm tired, man.
Liven.
It's just his head. It's all the shadows over his eyeballs.
That's what it is. I've been putting Preparation H in my...
Stop doing
bags
that.
Bags in my eyes for nothing.
Hey, let me tell you what that stuff is good for. When you cut yourself shaving, you get a little cut. Well, that is too. But I'm telling you, you get like a little cut that won't stop bleeding. Put your little Preparation H on it.
That sounds like a ploy to get me to be in some pain.
I don't want to put Preparation H on an open wound. Well, I guess your ass is an open wound. Drink your cocktail and shh.
That's water. What you want to hear right before you record a podcast is shh.
Well, yeah. Brian, can you take the ice out? All right, here we go. You're such a dick.
Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes a Spider-Man.
He arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Welcome fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big pain. Wherever there's a hang, you'll find a Spider-Man.